Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Oh, well, welcome back to Hurt. Okay, when we need to talk movies and culture, and we need to talk some movies and culture, politics is driving me crazy right now. Let's talk movies and culture with our own resident double board certified. That means two times certified for those of you from Logan, Luis Mendez. Mendez Movie Report does a great job. How are you, my friend? Been too long.
Oh, doing pretty good. I have to say that it is a much different world at the box office than when we last talked. When we last talked, we were talking about the complete meltdown of the industry over how bad that Memorial Day weekend was, but it's been night and day since then.
Yeah, they've hit on a couple of things. Let's start with Marvel, because two things happened within a couple of days of each other that I found really, really interesting. And let's be honest, Disney Marvel is the biggest IP in the world right now. I don't think anything's even really close to be fair. Maybe Star Wars, but a lot of that's the legacy. As far as the last 20 years, Marvel's it. Deadpool and Wolverine is destroying the box office. It's an absolute juggernaut. It's going to hit $1 billion worldwide by its second weekend. That's pretty remarkable. And at the same time that happened, Comic-Con happened out in San Diego, and they revealed the reboot for whatever we're on, where they've gotten rid of the Kang stuff because of the Jonathan Majors situation. They're bringing back Robert Downey Jr., and they announced Avengers Endgame in the next couple of Avengers movies. I think you have to take those two things together at the same time. So you have this big box office success. You got this big announcement that went over pretty well in the room, but a lot of people online are kind of a little unsure of it. I think in a lot of ways, this embellishes what is going on with Marvel right now. It's almost like they've got two minds and they can't make up their mind which way to go, because Wolverine's a huge hit, but it's also a very meta hit. It's also a very inside joke, kind of making fun of everything. Let me just lay it out to you this way. Wolverine's getting a lot of play off of making fun of the Fox years of covering Marvel stuff. And then the Comic-Con is almost repeating some of the Fox stuff, if you're old enough to remember it. Am I crazy here? Or do these two things look incongruent to me?
Well, I think they've been having this issue for years now, where I don't know if they realize what their identity is post-Endgame. They've been trying to do something with this multiverse saga, and the multiverse saga has honestly been mixed results. You've had these disasters at the box office, the Marvels. You've had badly received films like Quantumania or The Eternals. You've also had these massive hits, Deadpool, Wolverine, No Way Home, Guardians 3. But I think the problem is that for Deadpool Wolverine, that this is a great shot in the arm for them, but Deadpool Wolverine is kind of the finale of the Deadpool films. You know, maybe we'll get to see Deadpool show up at one of these Avengers movies, but I don't think we're gonna see Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine again. I'd be surprised if that's the case, because it definitely plays out like a finale of the Fox years. And that was kind of the same problem with last year, their big hit last year, Guardians 3. That was a finale. That was an end point for almost all of those characters. So the question to me is, are they going? How much are they going to lean more into this multiverse stuff, considering that they've had so many mixed results since then? And how much are they going to try to really introduce these new characters? Now, their big thing is supposed to be they're bringing back the Fantastic Four. They're rebooting them. But now you have these big questions as to the fact that they're bringing back Robert Downey Jr. for people to play Doctor Doom. Now, clearly, I think it's going to be some multiverse variant thing going on. And to be fair, there are comics where Tony Stark plays Doctor Doom in these sort of Elseworld sort of, you know, comics and stuff like that. Of course, the question is how much of this is desperation? I think it's a little bit of desperation and trying to put more of a shot in the arm to the franchise. At the same time, I'm open to seeing where it goes. I'm not upset by it. I'm not excited by it. To me, it is what it is. I want to see how they execute it. It can end up being a great execution. And I think Robert Downey Jr., who's always had fun doing these roles and is just coming off the success of Oppenheimer and winning an Oscar, I think he's going to have a lot of fun and put us all in the role. But the execution could also be a disaster. We do know that the Fantastic Four movies don't have the greatest track record. To be fair, they've never been in the MCU machine yet. So I do think that there are some folks who are upset about this, that maybe are coming from it from, quite frankly, bad faith angle, because there are cinephiles and film critics that are just so over the MCU that I do think they're basically rooting for it to end. And they're after Deadpool, after they tried to come after Deadpool and Wolverine, that ended up being a big success, a big audience success. It has some of the best audience scores of the MCU franchise. And quite frankly, some of the best audience scores of the year. I think it might overall have only second to Doom 2 for the best audience scores I've seen this year. And then all of a sudden, this controversial Doctor Doom casting drops. But there are some people who I think are of good faith who are like, look, if we're going to continue this MCU thing, I need something fresh. I need something new. And leaning more into these multiverse variants, bringing back Robert Downey Jr., you know, and these questions about the identity of the MCU going forward, I think they have a right to have a lot of questions or frustrations. You know, for me, I'm trying to keep an open mind and just hope that they execute it well.
I don't doubt Robbie Downey Jr., the actor. I know he's good. I'm old enough to remember him before his fall. People forget that Iron Man was his big comeback movie in a lot of ways. He'd had his own issues. They're well documented. I'm very proud of him and respect him for the way he's rebuilt not only his life. He talks openly. He's like, I'm a workaholic now because it keeps me sober. So I'm not surprised he's working. He's got his statue now. He can go get the bag and have fun. But I'm a little bit of the camp of just running back the Avengers Infinity War Endgame crew again feels a little dead. Look, they backed up the Brinks truck. The money they gave the Russos, $80 million. Downey's gotten almost, by the time this deal's done, he's going to be looking at about $500 million from Marvel and Disney all combined, counting his residuals and everything else. I don't know that Marvel sometimes understands why they were successful. Remember, Iron Man was a surprise hit. Iron Man is not a major comic book character. Everybody thinks it is now, but it really wasn't before the first movie hit really big. They didn't think that was supposed to be a stepping stone movie, not a pivotal moment movie. They didn't really think that was going to be the big massive hit it was. That built into the Avengers thing. And then Avengers Endgame and the Russo success, no disrespect to them. They're very talented, obviously. They got the highest grossing movie ever made. That was accumulation of years and years and years of stuff that really, and then they pulled it off and stuck the landing. They get the credit for that. But there was a lot of things that converged to make all that work. Sometimes I wonder if Marvel doesn't really understand the beast they're writing, that they created it. I'm not sure they fully understand why it was successful to start with. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, I mean, I think maybe that's one of the big issues that the MCU has bumped into. Everything now is high stakes. Everything now is team ups. Everything now is, you know, just going full blown into fan service. But what made a lot of those phase one, phase two, phase three films so successful is that basically you got the build up with the individual movies and got to understand and know these characters. That was a major problem that doomed the DCEU. They right away went into doing team ups and stuff like that. Plus the Zack Snyder of it all. But with the MCU, I keep hearing these things from Feige about, okay, we're going to get back to basics. We're going to get more grounded. But, you know, to me, I feel like they still have an identity crisis. And if you go back and look at these movies post-Endgame, I don't feel like there's anything connecting them. Like, I don't feel like there's any set direction. Now, they were supposed to start doing that with Kang, but then Jonathan Majors ended up having his legal issues, and he's out of there. And then I honestly don't think these TV shows have been helping either. You know, I think one of the biggest things that why I didn't like The Marvels, which is the only MCU movie that I've given an outright negative review, is that it was way too reliant on a lot of stuff from the shows. And I'm sorry, I don't got time to watch those shows. I've got too many movies to catch up on. Those shows are, you got to be careful making people feel like they got to do homework to understand these movies. But if they watch the movies as they're building up to it, then it doesn't feel like homework and they can identify with these characters and the plight and whatever's connecting them together much easier. You know, everybody was excited to finally see them take on Thanos because they slowly build up to him. Right now, there's nothing really being built other than there's a multiverse out there, these multiverse variants, and that's it. So I think they really should look into trying to be a little bit more grounded and down to earth. Now, one of my big hopes for them doing that would be this Blade movie that they wanted to do, but that has ended up being in pre-production hell. I mean, at this rate, we don't even know if we're going to get that movie. So I think I'm in agreement. I think they need to get a little bit more grounded, try to build these things up more, because right now it's just a little bit too much all at once.
You're talking about them being grounded. Luis Mendez, critic with us. The problem with being grounded is grounded movies make $75 to $120 million at the box office if they hit big. Like if you know, a character study movie, that's a big box office number for a movie. But once you put Marvel on it, if you're not getting $300-400 million first weekend, it's a failure. Now, I know that's not actual truth. I know historically that's the outlier. But when you slap the Marvel label on it and you slap an IP on it, especially if you use a beloved character or an intellectual property, I'm just picking one here. If you put a Wolverine in a movie, they had that. Remember, before Logan kind of redeemed that thing, that was looking to be a mess. Even with Jackman playing the role, they had problems with that. That's the problem. Everything with Marvel is supposed to be this money printing over the top thing. And a character study movie ain't going to do that. You can't have both. So they try to do some of that with the TV, but then it doesn't translate. You're a film critic. You're a film historian. The reason Avengers worked is because we cared about the characters. The reason Iron Man worked is because you care about the characters. The reason any film, sci-fi, horror, romance, whatever you want to pick, you got to care about the characters. Is the streaming and trying to do the world building of the multiverse and the TV shows and the films, is it just an environment where they haven't figured out how to build a character cross-platform anymore and then get the payoff, to use a wrestling term, with the big cinematic experience? Because that seems to be what they're trying to do, and they can't seem to kind of figure out how to do it.
Yes, exactly. Which is basically my larger point before that. I do think that that's been the problem. And if you look at what has been really successful for them the last couple of years, No Way Home. Well, we already had Spider-Man movies established, and that's on top of Spider-Man being such a popular IP. Guardians 3, where we had really two successful Guardians films, and the Guardians were featured prominently in the Thanos movies. Deadpool and Wolverine. The Deadpool movies were huge hits. Everybody loves Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. So they did have some underlying stuff in those movies that already made them set up for success even before the good word of mouth and the good reviews and such. In terms of the need for more character-driven movies. I would argue that Marvel can pull off doing those movies and make a ton of money because they've done it before. We've seen them, particularly when they were at their peak in the lead up to the Thanos films, where you would see Black Panther make $1 billion. Even with the mixed word of mouth, the first Captain Marvel made a bunch of money. Ant-Man, which is what was a huge gamble for them to try to make, made a pretty decent money. If they keep this loyal crowd coming to these movies and they get the good word of mouth going, to get the good critical reviews, I do believe that they can pull off these more grounded films while still making a ton of money. But I will say that I do think these films also have to be connected towards the lead up to a big thread, a big story with a big team up, which is what worked for them in the past. At the moment, there isn't really anything connecting these movies, even before these post-screens. And on top of that, these cancellations, Eternals didn't do so well. So now who knows if we'll ever see them again. We still have no idea if we're going to get a sequel to Shang-Chi. We don't know what the future of the Black Panther franchise is after what they ended up having to deal with to make that second one even happen in the first place. So they just really are at a cross point here. And I understand why they've decided we're going to take this gamble and bring RDJ back, but they're really going to have to execute this well, because they're not going to be able to constantly, if they just keep leaning into nostalgia, eventually that's going to catch up to them. Because, I mean, and the thing about the Deadpool Wolverine movies also is that I think is different from the other MCU films that some of these others we've talked about. I wrote this in my review. As much as I enjoyed the movie and had fun with it, I do have questions about how it will age, because it's so meta and it's so referential to these things in my generation that I can see that movie sort of going over the heads of a lot of people the older it gets. The MCU could end up having that problem if they keep leaning into this kind of fan service.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion, or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Yeah, Luis Mendez, Mendez Movie Reports, where you can read that review. It's excellent. I've shared it in my social media. You should follow too on Substack and on the Twitter. Let me ask you this way, because I don't want to just beat up on Marvel, because they've made a lot more money on movies than you and me have. So let's be honest about that part of it. But one of the things, look, the reason repeated success is hard is because success is hard. Repeated success is really, really hard. Constant success is almost impossible. how much of the business of movies is screwed? Because we're picking on the character development, we're picking on the scripts. Some of it's outside their control. They didn't know the Jonathan Majors thing was going to happen. They didn't know about Chadwick Boseman's going to, you know, tragically dying of a disease way too young. Some of that's out of your control, but that's the business. Things happen. How much of the movie business itself, because we forget the movie business when the first Iron Man film came out and they started building Avengers, streaming was still kind of this unknown thing. It was there, but it wasn't, you know, a lot of people were still on DVDs when that happened. We're forgetting the time frame here. The business model completely has changed. We're kind of picking on the directors and producers, but the business model, the studio model, the top-down pressure, how much of that's actually affecting Marvel? Because we know it's a money printer, but with money comes pressure. With money comes expectations from the people above you, not the artists, not the creators, the business people in the suits that have billions and billions of dollars wrapped up in this stuff. Are we beating up on Marvel a lot when a lot of this might just be the movie business itself, especially a beast like Disney, which has had its own corporate issues on a lot of levels? They don't know what to do either. And now you've got a leadership problem on top of a studio problem on top of a creative problem. Give me a ratio here. How much of this is just the business changing in the studio, not knowing how to handle Marvel, not just the creators? Because we focus on them because we know their names. We don't know the studio heads' names, right?
Right. Well, Disney has had a lot of turnover of late with some of their big wigs.
Disney doesn't know who's in charge of Disney right now, to be fair. But
I mean, they had to bring Rob, like Marvel bringing RDJ back, they had to bring Iger back. I would still give Marvel more blame than not. I'd probably say a good 60 to 70%. The other 30 to 40, I do think it's fair to say that we do sometimes put a lot of pressure on these MCU movies. And I mean, we've gotten to the point now where if an MCU movie makes $300-400 million, which there are some movies out there that would love to make that kind of money, you know, it's considered, oh, underperforming. That's disappointing. You know, it's wild to think about. Like right now, I think it's the new Bad Boys movie is on the cusp of making about $400 million. For Bad Boys, that's incredible. That's great. That shows that that sort of sub-franchise still has a crowd that comes to see it. If that were an MCU movie, that would be considered a complete, almost downright failure. Be making that kind of money. So to be fair, the expectations on the MCU are a little ridiculous and sky high. I mean, like, a lot of people keep talking about the MCU's failures of last year. And yeah, to be fair, Quantumania didn't have the greatest reviews. The Marvels didn't have the greatest reviews, and it really did not do particularly well at the box office. But they still had Guardians 3, which made almost $1 billion. And while it's not part of the MCU, the Spider-Verse animated movie made a lot of money and ended up being one of the most highly respected and well-received films of the year. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that some of it is maybe unfair expectations. But at the end of the day, you still need to get a product out there that provides that word of mouth, gets people to want to not just come to the theater, but come to the theater a second, a third time, you know? And the thing about this is that you're going to get your hardcore fans. So for instance, everybody who knows me knows what a massive Godzilla fan I am. So yes, I went and I saw Godzilla and Kong four times. Now, the casual moviegoer is probably not going to go watch the new Godzilla movie four times. They're maybe going to see it once, maybe twice, and then they're going to wait for it to show up on HBO Max. What makes these MCU movies make so much money is that it's not just the hardcore fans that come back multiple times. And to do that, you still need good word of mouth. You need good reviews. And to do that, you need good writing. You need good story. You need a good cohesive structure going through these movies. So while there are high expectations, the MCU should still have plenty of critiques that they need to fix.
And the business model, one of the reasons I like talking films with you, because you understand the business of it enough to understand that, yeah, that actually affects what you see in the theater. the old model, and we've beaten it to death, but it's important when you talk about something like the MCU or an intellectual property of that caliber. The reason they keep going back to a Marvel or a Star Wars or Disney and these other studios are really hedging on their IPs is the old business model was you could have a sleeper hit and then you get the residuals from DVD sales and hard media and things like this. Now everything is getting your money up front because the streaming services, you're getting money up front. You're not getting it as you go. And the box office has to be that upfront number because there's no legs anymore. You may get a cup. Yeah. You may get a Deadpool and Wolverine where people will go back two or three times. Top Gun Maverick, I saw it three different times, but one of those was because I saw it in IMAX and I wanted to see it on regular screen because you just can't see everything. Like, you just physically, that sort of thing. But those are rare. That's the business model that's really changed, and that's why that thing where you're talking about a $400 million movie seeming like a failure, well, because that's all there is. It used to be you could kind of bomb, get $40 million at the box office, it's a failure, but you're going to make another $200 million on DVD sales or whatever. Well, now you're making, because you got a, you know, a couple hundred million dollar contract on streaming, but that's getting chopped up for every single movie, every single property that comes out. That's the business model that's really changed and put that downward pressure. Downward is the wrong word. The upward pressure, maybe you'd say, on those box office numbers being so.
That's kind of the genesis of everything. They haven't figured out that little piece.
Yeah, I mean, now there we still get a couple movies that get revitalized through legs, but they're rare. You know, not everything can be a Greatest Showman. Not everything can be a Elemental. And we still get movies that see new life in streaming or video through the Blu-rays and stuff like that. Godzilla King of the Monsters, I remember that's the only MonsterVerse film that didn't do too hot at the box office. And then it did really good on home media. Furiosa, which we were talking about how last time I was here, about how that didn't do so great at the box office. Early on, it looks like it's doing much better on home media. But generally, these days, especially with big IP, you want to make an impact the weekend you come out. You know, that way, that it's almost like a shock and awe effect where you just have everything blow up the first weekend. And from there, you create FOMO, you create great word of mouth, you create this feeling like you are what everyone's talking about that weekend. And sometimes it's really hard to live up to those expectations, especially for these smaller films. But even the IP films can struggle at times. And the MCU is just, they have, for better or worse, they have become the measuring stick for that kind of stuff. So their expectations are really high.
Luis Mendez Movie Report, double certified critic. From the most modern issues in movies, I want to talk about some of the oldest issues in movies and vintage. I want to do this on purpose because vintage film is really having a moment. Some of it's YouTube. Some of it's people finding this stuff. There's the subculture around like Turner Classic Movies and those kind of things. I love that kind of stuff. You've wrote about, you know, early, before the talkies, as they called it, when we started getting sound as we modern know it in the late 20s, early 30s, the pre-20s and earlier films, you have a real love for these. I'm going to use the example of a movie that I love. We've talked about it before, Metropolis. Extremely influential. Look, any cityscape shot you've ever seen that special effects came from that movie. Talk about this vintage media, because I really see more and more people discovering this stuff. Some of it's YouTube, some of it, I've seen a lot of it on like TikToks and the little short video feeds. Now they get just the clips from them and people don't even know, oh, that's from a 1920s movie, that's from a silent era movie. You're seeing a lot of Buster Keaton stuff popping up in memes all of a sudden. There really does seem to be a vintage movie moment happening Talk about that for a minute, because I find some of that silent stuff. And the other thing is HD, that old black and white film looks so gorgeous in high definition when it's cleaned up. It's really lush. It really, it's not black and white's not even fair to call it that, because there's tones in it. Talk about the moment that vintage film is having right now, especially the old silent movie stuff that's creeping into culture in ways that you probably never expected.
Yeah, I've had a theory that it's probably helped by the fact that a lot of these movies are entering the public domain over the last couple of years, so that probably helps a lot. I also think that one of the biggest helps for this, because it does seem to be driven particularly by younger people, is the Letterboxd, which is basically the younger, hipper version of IMDb, and I think a much better, well-structured than IMDb to find movies and such, where you really could just go back all the way back to the 1870s, when there were these little 6-second clips to look at to really track down movies. Now, obviously, there's a lot of lost film out there, but what we do have is still very influential, and I would highly recommend people check it out. Now, before people do check out silent cinema, I would say to them that I've always compared it to, it's like if you decide to try out a new liquor, it's an acquired taste. You have to kind of get used to it, because silent film, it has a different pacing. Sometimes you can tell they're still trying to figure out how to do these movies, because there will be shots that linger a little bit too long, scenes that last a little bit too long. And then, of course, there's the whole, you know, if you're so used to hearing the characters, especially this day and age where people like look down on their phone, but they're still hearing the dialogue, you have to really bring your attention to a silent film. Once you start getting used to that, and you start really discovering these movies that, unfortunately, and I think time is only going to make this harder, even with some of these new discoveries, you know, these are not your classics that you've heard about, and they certainly aren't classics that a lot of people have grown up with. But once you do that, you get to discover Metropolis. You get to discover what I think is a D.W. Griffith film that we really should be studying, not Birth of a Nation, which is incredibly offensive. What people should be studying is Intolerance, which I think is his greatest film. You have Nosferatu, which, interestingly enough, we're going to get a sort of remake to that at the end of this year. You can check out Way Down East, which is I think is a great romantic melodrama from D.W. Griffith. You have Sunrise, A Song of Two Humans, which technically you could argue may have actually been the first Best Picture winner at the Oscars, because the first year they actually had two Best Picture prizes, but the Academy officially doesn't recognize the Sunrise win. My brain's just going crazy, because you can see the first movie of Zorro, you can see the first movie of Robin Hood. There's a lot of great things to find from these what I consider pre-classical cinema, because when we think of classical cinema, we sort of start thinking about maybe 1927, 1928, as talkies are coming out. We don't really think that much about the silent era. And I agree with you. I think especially in 4K, they look so much better. The expression that these actors have to do in comparison, because it's all about the expression. It's all about the facial reactions rather than the talking. If people can just get adjusted to it, they will discover some really great epics from the silent age.
Yeah, Luis Mendez joining us. I got a theory on it too, is, and I've seen it with my own children when I show them little clips of stuff. We just talked about Marvel and how Marvel and some of the secret sauce to that stuff is interconnected, and Easter, kids call them Easter eggs, but it's the playoff previous things. When you watch silent movie, like you watch Metropolis, I'll go back to that. Metropolis is available on YouTube. We don't have all of it. They think we have about 60% of it. We know that he filmed, we know he filmed about 4 hours worth, and we got about 2 hours and 20 minutes of it. We found 20 minutes of it a couple of years ago. They found it in a box sitting somewhere. But you can watch it on YouTube for free. A lot of this stuff's public domain now. But like Metropolis, those city shots, you can see that in Blade Runner. You can see that in Phantom Menace. You can see it in the Coppola film that just came out, which is almost a direct homage to Metropolis, Megalopolis, that's coming out. He took that stuff. Those callbacks we're talking about with characters and things and like the Marvel movies, all of a sudden your kids can see these old silent movies like, oh, I've seen that shot before, or I've seen that effect before, or I've seen that way, that, because this is the genesis of a lot of the ways things we take for granted, like the first trolley shots, panning shots, zoom ins, which, because remember, like you just said, one of the things that takes you a minute to adjust these silent films is the blocking and staging of them was blocked and staged like they were doing on it on a stage because they didn't know any better. That was their only frame of reference. So a lot of it is very flat, plain, linear blocking, and it looks kind of weird. But things like that, but you can pick up as they, oh, well, I don't have to just shoot it straight on. I can pan the camera to the right, or we can two shot this and switch back and forth, and you can see the begins of editing. I think people like finding those little Easter eggs, and then it starts reminding them of how much, like, I can watch Star Wars and I see Metropolis and Kurosawa meshed together to make Star Wars, because that's how George Lucas saw it, right? And if you start studying the history of cinema, and even all the way back to the silent movies, I think people start putting it together like, oh, I've seen that shot before. Oh, I've seen that effect before. I think people dig that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd also throw in, like, if you watch Intolerance at the end, there's this big sort of thing where it keeps cutting back and forth between these different timelines. And that at that time, that was considered revolutionary editing. So I agree with you. I think people are finding that very, you know, inspiring in some ways. And if you're really just into the shot, because there are some movie fans that for them, it's about how does it look visually? I mean, some of these people, they make complaints about certain movies that I think look pretty fine. And I'm like, okay, I don't see what the complaint is. Maybe I'm not seeing through the filter enough. But from a visual standpoint, these silent films are going to give you great visuals. One that has been going around for years, for what it feels like for years now, is this incredible tracking shot in Wings, which happens to be the recognized first Best Picture winner. And that's just, even almost 100 years later, that shot is just incredible how they pulled that off and how well done it is. But like I always tell people, because I had seen some silent films throughout my time, and then a couple years ago, I really decided to sit down, and I ended up, if anybody went in my letterbox, they could see, I went and watched a lot of silent films, and it does take some adjusting to, but like I said, it's worth the time if you can adjust to it, because you will find great stories. You will find a lot of the history in film. And it, you know, it's unfortunate because I do think there's these movies, as time goes on, it's going to be harder and harder to remember them. But thankfully for these films, compared to maybe say some books that came out centuries ago, the ability and the technology to preserve them is there, and hopefully future generations will be willing to go and check out some stuff that maybe isn't in the sort of the official film canon of film historians.
Yeah, I like the idea that memes are grabbing some of this old, now that it's in the public domain. So we joke about memes and stuff, but you know, culture's culture. So now that stuff's in the public domain, there's limits to everything in moderation. I think it's a good thing that people, you know, normal people can grab some of this stuff that used to be IPs. And in a way that does keep it perpetuated to the next generation, that, you know, that I've seen a lot, the famous Buster Keaton shot where he's on the front of the train and all the ways comes. I'm seeing that all over the place on memes. A lot of the old Buster Keaton stuff is very memeable. Stuff like that, I think it's important. So that's one of those things. And my kids are older now. The youngest is 16, almost 17 next month. So my kids have kind of grown up with this stuff. I think it's cool to use that old stuff in your memes and your commentary on your social media. It is an homage, to use the fancy French word that just means, you know, honoring it. I do think it's honoring it to use it as a meme and to joke around with it, because something that's 100 plus years old, like Metropolis, And you can use, and I've used it in writings, because I've used that famous shot of the of Maria from the underground pulling the lever to stop the slavery, which is literally what she's doing. If you watch the film, go watch it, kids. I've used that on my writing before, and like 1 out of every 1,000 people might get the reference or Google it or Tenai and go, oh, wow, that's really cool. Deep. I think that's a cool way to honor this ancient cinema. I call it ancient. It's only 100 years old, but to us it's ancient because we're young. I think that's a good way to honor this stuff.
Yeah, it actually kind of reminds me of a movie from 2 years back, which, a movie that people were kind of divided on, but the young people really gravitated to. And I personally ended up loving Babylon, where there's a scene where Brad Pitt's character, he realizes his movie career is over. He hasn't been able to transition well from silent to sound. And this sort of gossip entertainment columnist kind of has to sit down with him and tells him straight up, like, look, you're going to die one day. And 100 years from now, there's going to be some young boy who watches you on screen, and they're going to be mesmerized by whatever they're seeing you do. And it's almost like there's your immortality there. And that scene really encapsulates what I think is going on right now with some of these young people rediscovering these films. And I would say, I guess I can get a little plug here real quick, is that if any young person out there or anybody in general is interested as to what I would recommend be the silent films that you maybe give a try, if you are a Medium partner or a paid tier subscriber, I do have what I am been releasing, and I'm trying to release them about once a week, what I call a Films That Matter series. And at the moment I am covering pre-classical films, so it's been nothing but silent films, and those are, you know, what I consider to be the most important films in sort of what I would think should be the film canon for any future would-be film historians, to watch movies and understand the history of film, understand how it progresses, understand what has aged well, what at the time was a massive hit with audiences, even if maybe it hasn't necessarily aged well. And at the moment, I just came out with the early 20s covering 1920 and 1923, what I think are still, even 100 years later, incredibly influential and important films.
Yeah, I agree. Luis Mendez, look up Mendez Movie Report on the Substack. I subscribe. You should too. It's really good stuff. Before I let you go, we always let you take a shot at this. Can you feel the Oscar season starting to bubble a little bit, getting to be about that time of the year, get through the summer? There's a couple big movies still coming out. Of course, there's the major, you know, the gorilla in the room, the Dunes of the world that have been there from the beginning. There's some interesting films coming out through the late summer, early fall that could sneak up on some people. There's some big ticket items that people will be watching, you know, the Jokers and the Gladiators 2 and those. There's the sleepers that we've been talking about, like Sing Sing. They're not really sleepers, but the general public probably hasn't heard of them. The Ralph Fiennes Concave movie is getting a lot of rumors and word of mouth of where he plays a bishop, that he might be getting some looks. What's a couple things you're watching kind of in, I don't know, election, we call them silly season. This is a little bit of the silly season where you're still waiting for the possibilities to come before everything firms up by the end of the year. What do you think we should be watching for the Oscar races between now and the fall when things start settling down a little?
Well, you know, it's interesting because last year I felt like a lot of awards voters basically made up their minds before we got to the final stage of the race, which was unfortunate for some of the really late breakers like Color Purple or The Iron Claw. I think this year's going to be different because it seems like a lot of the heavy hitters are going to be coming at the end of the year. In terms of what we're dealing with right now, Sing Sing is supposed to start opening more wide in August, and I've been very looking forward to it because at this point I almost feel like the only critic who hasn't seen the movie, and I've heard nothing but great things about it. We do have, in terms of the fall festivals, which are going to be very important, because if these fall festival films don't hit, you can end up with a situation where we get a more populous and normal Best Picture lineup like we got 2 years ago, the year that Everything Everywhere won and was up against Top Gun, Avatar, and those kind of things. Conclave, keep an eye on that. Though it's interesting that it just got out that the movie's going to be rated PG. It's historically rare for a movie to that's not rated R to win Best Picture. We've got a movie called, and I don't know if you might have to edit this, but this is the title of it, Night Bitch, which is a Amy Adams film that I've heard great things about her performance. We've got Timothy Chalamet is going to be doing a Bob Dylan biopic. We've got Joker 2, which is going to be a jukebox musical. Gladiator 2, I've been hearing that that's better than a lot of people might anticipate it is. It looks like Denzel's going to definitely eat up the scenery in that film. I still think people need to keep an eye out on Wicked. If that is a big enough hit and can hit the tax, it can sneak in. I do think it can sneak into Best Picture. And we have Anora, which was the big Cannes film winner, which is a movie about a sex worker who falls in love with this, like, Russian mobster kid, and apparently it's supposed to be thrilling and funny and kind of have Uncut Gem vibes. And Emilia Perez is another one that's going to be a big Netflix Spanish film, a musical that tries to touch on some social issues. But really at this moment, we're kind of just waiting for these fall festivals and these late IP films to come in, because at the moment, the conversation is just Dune 2, and have you seen Sing Sing yet? Because it really, 7 months in, this film year to me has been kind of more disappointing than that. It's not to say that there haven't been some gems and some really fun films, but it really feels like we're waiting for the good stuff to come out later in the year. So that's where we're at right now.
Can I throw a pitch for Iron Claw just for a second? Because we're both wrestling fans from way back, you know, before it went off the deep end in recent years. Iron Claw, if you're not familiar, that's the Von Erich family back in the late 70s to the mid 90s. It's a really dark, tragic story. I will defer to the great Jim Cornette, who was there for all that, legendary wrestling figure, great podcast, by the way, if you want to listen to it. And his review was, none of them people said any of that or did any of that, but it's a great, great movie, and it got the spirit of it. So that's a pretty good review, yeah. I think, as reviews go.
Yeah, it's there are a lot of like things you can nitpick about that movie in terms of historical accuracy, even though you can do that with a lot of these biopics, but it was one of my favorite movies of last year, and it's a shame that it kind of got shut out of awards season.
Yeah, Cornette was there for all that, so he knows what he's talking about. Is Efron underrated? Has he gone from overrated to underrated? Because everything I've seen him do, his last three or four projects, call it what it is. He did Baywatch. I get it. He got the bag. Yeah. It was a silly movie. Pretty much everything since then is hit. And I don't mean like a big hit. I mean like he really jumps off the screen at you. I forget. One of my things with the movies, at some point in the movie, I have to forget I'm watching a movie. I forgot I was watching Zac Efron. And I mean that as a very, very high compliment for somebody. Because remember The Age of My Kids? That was one, you know, I had to sit through all the, you know, High School Musical movies. I know them by heart because I've seen them so many. For me to forget that was Zac Efron on the screen is a huge compliment for me to give him. And I did. Is he kind of creeping up there in the tiers of act? Is he underrated now? Has he turned the corner on the teen actor thing? Because I think he's really, really good.
Well, first of all, he deserved more than he got for Iron Claw, because he did have one. He was in my personal ballot. I'm proud to say that us in the Puerto Rico Critics Association did nominate him for Best Actor. I think it's criminal the way that he was overlooked. But I think it's an inflection point, because I think a lot of people were kind of taken aback by his performance there. He's just now going to have to follow it up to keep making people see what kind of actor he is. And at a certain point, they're not going to be able to ignore him. So I just hope that he takes, because what we've gotten from him so far, these sort of two silly comedies that came out to Amazon and Netflix. So I'm hoping to see him do more sort of Iron Claw stuff in the future.
Yeah, he might wind up being one of those. If he can string some together, there's two ways to win an Oscar. You do something really great and the groundswell gets underneath you, or the Oscars snub you and then you do something great later and they feel like they owe you. There's been quite a few of those makeup Oscars, let's be honest. Maybe he gets one of them down the line.
Louis Mendes. It could happen this year with Samuel Jackson. The acting race is going to be very interesting. Samuel Jackson might have a shot of he's already got an Oscar, but it's an honorary Oscar. So
he should have got one for Jackie Brown, but let me not get on my soapbox about Jackie Brown is the best Quentin Tarantino film, and it's not particularly close in my humble but accurate opinion. But
I like Jackie Brown, but Pulp Fiction's my favorite.
Yeah, a lot of talky. He didn't restrain. I love it too because it broke the genre, but it also by the time you get to Hateful Eight, you see that just letting Quentin write dialogue to the end of the day doesn't always work out super well, even though it works out the first time. Louis Mendes, what in movies should we pay attention to that we're going to miss in the next couple months? Because, okay, the Deadpool thing is going to be really big. Twisters looks like it's going to be big because it's just mindless fun and people want mindless fun in the summertime. We're talking about actors. I mean, we got to just admit that he's going to be the actor of the near future, I think, if you go from Top Gun to this. What should we watch in movies going into the fall? Because like you said, we got some big names, some big ticket items coming. Do they hit? Do they not hit? What should we watch here?
Well, small movie-wise, if folks keep an eye out for it, do check out Sing Sing. I've heard good things about it. There's Didi, which is a coming-of-age film from the perspective of a young Asian boy. We've also got Cuckoo, which is going to be a horror film starring Hunter Schafer and Dan Stevens. And Dan Stevens has been having a bit of a moment. He's been really showing his chops as a character actor this year between Cuckoo, Abigail, and Godzilla and Kong. Big movie-wise, we've got Alien Romulus, which is going to be very interesting. They seem to be going back to the roots of the original Alien film with the atmosphere of that film. Borderlands is going to be interesting. It sort of looks like a dime store Guardians of the Galaxy to me, but it is based off a video game, and it's going to be interesting to see if that ends up being a big hit for them. And I believe in a couple of weeks we should get Speak No Evil, which is actually from a remake of a foreign language horror film that has James McAvoy in it. And this weekend, as we record this, we've got the new M. Night film Trap, which I'm really interested to see how that plays out. It's about Josh Hartnett coming off his success in Oppenheimer. He plays a dad who is apparently a serial killer trying to hide out from the police. So that's good. It might have a little bit of M vibes for anybody who's seen that movie. So that's what's coming to mind at the moment. As I'm honestly mostly in wait and see for these festival films, which no disrespect to those movies. A lot of the movies I just mentioned, but I just feel like the really heavy stuff is going to be coming towards the final quarter of the year.
I would watch Jamie Lee Curtis read the phone book, so I'll check out Borderlands, because I looked at that trailer like, wait a minute, that's Jamie Lee Curtis. What's she doing?
Yeah, I was very surprised. I must have missed that casting news when I first saw that trailer.
Like, what? How'd that happen? I am of the age where coming of age involved Jamie Lee Curtis, and we'll leave it at that. Louis Mendes, Mendes Movie Report. Tell people what you do, because you do the quick reviews with the ABC grades on it. That's great, too. But you mentioned it earlier, just walk people through it, how they can subscribe, because you also do a lot of vintage stuff. You bring up stuff. You've worked for us at Ordinary Times doing things. You have ratings of movies by the decades going all the way back to the 1890s. That's impressive stuff. Let folks know where they can find you, what you got going on, and what to do at the Mendes Movie Report.
Well, MendesMovieReport.com is my Substack. You can subscribe for free. You get weekly movie. I try to get a weekly movie review of whatever the big movie is out. I also reveal quite openly. I'm not like other critics. I'm openly reveal whatever personal ballots I'm sending for the awards groups that I vote in. I also go ahead and link up any media appearances I do. I've just started to begin a bit of a live stream/podcast with my good friend Dan. Skip Allen from the4throw.com to talk the award season. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you get bonus reviews of maybe some smaller movies and my Films That Matter series, which is, again, me trying to build a film canon for would-be film historians of what I believe are the most influential and important films in the history of the medium. And if you need to find me on social media, Facebook, Threads, Twitter/X, Letterboxd. My Letterboxd, I've been told, is very, very thorough. Under Mendes Movie RPT.
He does great work. We've been talking to him for years now, believe it or not. We're starting to get old, buddy. We've been doing it for years now. Always appreciate him. We'll keep talking about it. Make sure you check out all that live stream stuff. Every time we have a chance to talk movies with him, we will do so, probably again in about another month, because I think the end of September might get a little interesting in movies because of those festivals you talked about. Luis Mendes, Mendes Movie Report. Appreciate you, my friend. Thank you for the time.
Hey, I'm always happy to be here.
Thank you, sir.
All the music on Her Tell is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com. Somos la máquina.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.